Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Friday, the 21st of July. I'm Jane Ayeko-Kumet and you're welcome to DW's Africa Link program.
And hosting your responses, I am Abubakar Jalo.
Coming up in today's edition, the trial of South Sudanese soldiers accused of rape and other abuses remains hanging as the prosecutor fails to present victims of the case.
For the sake of justice, the court is requesting victims to come and testify.
And Dides from Rwanda said, who are those victims? The court should first know why the victims are absent. More responses later.
And it's becoming a war of words as President Erdogan shoots back at Berlin.
President Erdogan's comments by his standards are pretty restrained. You have to recall earlier in the year, he referred to the German government as behaving like Nazis.
All that and a lot more coming up shortly, so don't go away.
I'm Isaac Mugabe with DW News. The diplomatic rift between Ankara and Berlin is widening. In its latest move, the German government has announced it is reviewing all arms sales to Turkey. Last year, the German government exported more than 80 million euros worth of armaments to Turkey. The row between the two NATO partners worsened on Thursday after Germany's Foreign Minister Sigmar Gabriel threatened punitive measures over the arrest of human rights activists in Turkey. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has told Germany to, quote, pull itself together. So, DW's Dorian Jones in Ankara tells us briefly the kind of language that Erdogan is using.
Well, by Turkish President Erdogan's standards, the language he's been using is pretty restrained. You have to recall that earlier in the year, he accused the German government of behaving like Nazis. So there was none of that today. And for the moment now, I think Turkey's trying to downplay this crisis. They're looking and hoping that this is more to do with the German election and campaign politics, and hope that this rhetoric doesn't turn into concrete action.
Kenya's government has threatened to clamp down on social media users who spread hate speech or fake news that could fund violence in the lead-up to elections next month. The government has increased its tracking of words on social networks and message services likely to incite violence around the general elections on August 8, 2017. At least three Palestinians have been shot dead in Jerusalem following clashes that erupted between Israeli police and Palestinian protesters in the city after Friday Muslim prayers. The violence was triggered by new security restrictions that blocked some Palestinians from praying at a sacred site. Tanya Kramer with an update of the situation there.
Well, there's still heavy police presence in and around Jerusalem, and also, the prayer at noon went over quite peacefully. But of course, people are looking now at the evening prayers as well. People at noon came to pray and to protest the new security measures, but most couldn't even reach the old city because also Israel had restricted access.
You're listening to DW's News, coming to you straight from our studios in Bonn, Germany. In the next few hours, Poland's Senate is expected to approve a new bill that critics say represents a step towards authoritarian rule. Tens of thousands have turned out to protest against the law they say strips the country's top court of its independence. The EU is also concerned about the move and has threatened to sanction Poland if it does not change course. At least two people are killed when a 6.7 magnitude quake struck the Greek island of Kos and Turkey's Aegean coast, sending tourists out to the streets. USGS put the epicenter near the Turkish resort of Bodrum. The island's port was damaged, as well as the 14th century fortress at the port's entrance and the Lok Mosque. In business, German automaker Audi says it will fit up to 850,000 diesel cars with new software to improve their emissions performance, following a similar move by rival Daimler as the auto industry tries to get ahead of public controversy over the technology. For more news, visit our website dw.com/Africa. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
You're listening to DW's Africa Link program, broadcasting from Bonn, Germany. I'm Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And your responses make part of this show. I'll bring them. Abubakar Jalo here.
The trial of 12 South Sudanese soldiers charged of rape and other abuses is still hanging. The prosecutor has failed to present victims of the case again for the seventh time since the session started in May this year. For DW, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Presiding Judge Knight Bruni today has rejected more requests by the prosecutor on the case regarding how the examination of the victims of the case should be done. The rejection of the request came after defense lawyer Peter Malual objected, saying they are unlawful. Here is Judge Bruni.
For the sake of justice, the court is requesting victims to come and testify. The court rejects all requests to take the statements of the victims outside the country or video conference because all these requests are not leading the court to the truth.
Prosecutor Mayel Jekariek had appealed for the court to examine the victims outside the country or in a video conference on the grounds that transporting the victims and having them reside in South Sudan is expensive. Riek also appealed for court to carry out DNA tests of the suspects and also called for 8 more army officers to be arrested and summoned to the court for charges of looting vehicles. This is the seventh time that the victims, who we are expected to appear today, have so far failed to surface. The absence of the victims risks throwing away the rape and murder charges by the panel of judges who say their physical presence in the court is a legal requirement. Deng Mayel is one of the judges in the panel of the judges of the military court handling the case.
We need them. Otherwise, the terrain will yield responsibility because they were in terrain. And if they win the case, the government will pay them.
12 soldiers have been charged of rape, murder, looting and destruction they carried out last year in July in Terrain Hotel following military clashes between government forces and those aligned with the rebel leader Riek Machar in the capital Juba.
Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
And two quick responses here. Tuji Amani, a Ugandan living in Canada, said, South Sudan is an example of a country where poor male leadership is the order of the day. It seems there are few people in positions of power who are interested in true nation building. And Jidez from Rwanda said, where are those victims? The court should first know why the victims are absent. Those soldiers should be punished according to the severity of crimes they committed.
Yes, and we continue with other stories in the world. It's a war of words. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has shot back at Germany, saying it should pull itself together and that Germany cannot threaten Ankara. Germany does not have the power to smear or scare Turkey, he said. President Erdogan denies claims that German companies operating in Turkey could be targeted under anti-terror laws. DW's Amred Chema has been speaking to Dorian Jones about the latest developments.
Well, President Erdogan's comments by his standards are pretty restrained. You have to recall earlier in the year, he referred to the German government as behaving like Nazis. Now, there's been none of that today. In fact, he did appear to reach out to German companies working in Turkey, saying that there are no investigations into them over the alleged coup plot last year. Those comments have been echoed by Turkey's deputy prime minister, Mehmet Şimşek. And I think there is a concern over the economic fallout of this rising tensions with Berlin. In fact, the economy minister today announced that Turkey is set for record exports. Now, with Germany being Turkey's number one trading partner, there will be concerns over the impact of that, as the economy is very important for Erdogan maintaining his support within the country. So for now, at least, it seems that Ankara is ready to write off this rhetoric as more to do with the German elections, and they will hope that when those elections pass in September, things will calm down.
And in fact, Dorian, the Turkish Prime Minister has been trying to play down things. Do you think his attempts to de-escalate the situation would work?
Well, I think at the moment there isn't really much appetite in Ankara for a major fight with Berlin and possibly the rest of the European Union. You have to realise that Turkey has a lot on its plate. It has tensions with the United States. It has problems with its Gulf Arab allies over the Qatar crisis, problems with Moscow, and virtually no real relations with any of its southern neighbours, and a raging civil war in Syria. So there's a lot on Turkey's plate at the moment. So the last thing it wants is a major fight with Berlin. But the most important caveat here is that if Berlin's rhetoric turns into concrete actions, if Turkey is directly impacted by threats from Berlin, then the president will be compelled to push back, and he will push back in force. So at the moment, Ankara is in a wait-and-see mode, hoping that this crisis will come to pass and they will not have to have a showdown with Berlin.
DW's Dorian Jones. Now we go back to Africa. Acacia Mining, a mining company based in London, has denied a report by Reuters that Tanzania has asked foreign employees to leave the country. The move is an escalation of a dispute that began in 2016 over allegations of tax evasion. A source with knowledge of the matter told Reuters news agency on Friday. Glory Mushinge has more on the report.
According to the report by Reuters, Tanzania detained and questioned two senior local Acacia Mining staff at an airport this week in a dispute with the government. The London-listed company admitted that it was having trouble renewing work permits for foreign staff in the East African nation. Chief Executive Brad Gordon denied a Reuters report that foreign staff were asked to leave by the government due to a dispute over mining licenses and accusations of tax evasion. He said its local employees had been interviewed by Tanzanian government agencies but did not confirm detentions. Acacia declined to comment on the issue when pressed by DW. The government accuses Acacia of tax evasion in 2016 and says it has been operating illegally, a claim the gold mining company denies. Tanzanian President John Magufuli has ordered the suspension of any new licenses as he pushes through reforms in tax revenues.
Glory Mushenge reporting.
Now, Ayeko, I'll take you to a different story.
Oh,
now,
yes.
That is a couple of young guys from Burundi went for a conference in the United States in Washington D.C.
Oh yes, I saw that. We had that
and
on
they were
our news.
Robotic student actually,
yeah, yes,
and
remember.
Now they've stowed away. They've basically disappeared. The assumption is that they've stowed away, and the article has been causing a lot of stir,
yes,
on our different platforms.
Yes.
I'll give you some of these responses. We have Al-Kasim. Well, first of all, we ask, would you return home if you happen to be in such a situation where your country back home finds itself in such a situation and you happen to be in Europe or in the United States?
Well, Abu, if you direct that question to me, I must say I don't have an answer. I can only cross the bridge when I'm there. But since I'm not in their shoes, I wouldn't be in position to answer.
That's a diplomatic way of getting out of it. Anyways, let me give you the responses here. Al-Kasim from Nigeria said, well, that's funny. Of course not. I'd rather disappear and play hide and seek with the cops in the US.
That's a risky game there.
Yeah.
And Percy from Cameroon says, well, we need to understand before blaming the students for escaping. They didn't see any hope back in their country. Despite their intelligence, most of African countries at present are caves of frustration for even the best citizens. The problem is the country, not the students.
Martha from Bamenda in Cameroon actually disagrees. He says, yes, I would return home. No place on earth is better than home. This is to show how frustrated our African leaders have made the youths to be. No European citizens would ever come to Africa for a game and escape.
A story that's really, really amassing lots of responses on our platforms. Rikewa Kefas from Abuja says, not just a political crisis. They realize they have talents and gifts that can only thrive in a sinner climate like the United States.
Anyways, we are going to continue reading the comments, but if you would want to find out where to get this article, go to our webpage dw.com/Africa, or you check us on Facebook, DW Africa.
Yes.
Didis from Rwanda said, Burundi is still insecure. Maybe those students were not willing to return because they are aware of what is happening in their country. Everybody from Burundi knows how innocent people are killed by the day. I would urge those students to stay in America or search for exile in other countries rather than coming back into their country.
That's not, well, that kind of advice. I hope they are listening and they...
Yeah.
It's their choice. I mean, it's their choice.
We still have more responses here to go and we have time for it, so I guess we're going to give them a try.
Yes. Kwasi here, Gaba from Ghana, says, this is an opportunity of a lifetime since reports indicate that two of them have been seen crossing the border to Canada. Then it just might be planned. I would have done the same, though.
And an interesting one from Bashia in Nigeria said, maybe they have seen a greener pasture and they are afraid of coming back to Burundi.
Uncertainty. So much uncertainty there, Abu. Like I said, I don't know what I would have done, but probably I wouldn't have escaped. You might want to continue with this debate a little later, but for now, we leave it. You're listening to DW's Africa Link program, coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I'm Jane Ayeko Kemet.
And with your responses, I am Abubakar Jalo.
Still to come, we hear about Guinea's masks, music and minerals in our blog report. And of course, lots of sports updates from around the continent.
And I have a question. How about a successful trip overseas? Would you return home empty-handed? This is, of course, different from the Burundi story. We have a brave Senegalese who actually did that after living in Germany.
We'll be getting that in this report immediately. I actually want to start off with that one, as you put it. Now, with the migration crisis looming on, many are also opting to go back home after failing to live the European dream. But the challenge is that whoever returns home must be ready to be seen as a failure. Matafal is one of them. Having gotten an EU startup grant, he voluntarily returned to Senegal, but his laundry startup business was not successful and now he's back to zero. Crispin Wakdeo brings us his story in a report by Lange Shafaga.
Matar had plans for his future. He wanted to open a self-service laundry. That's why he volunteered to come home to Senegal after living as a migrant in Spain and Germany. He was given a startup grant from the EU, 3,500 euros. And from this grant, he bought 6 used washing machines from Germany, but unfortunately, his plan didn't work.
There are hardly any laundrette in Senegal. It would have taken a year or two for people to be informed about my business and for it to become a success. But I didn't have enough money. I could only pay rent for 3 months. So I had to close down. I had no more capital.
His parents got into debt so he could go to Europe. They hoped Matar would find a job and send money back home. Now, nearly 8 years later, he's back, empty-handed. His mother, Ndayasin Gaye, runs a small kiosk. Most of the money she makes goes into paying off their debt. She can't hide her disappointment.
I thank God that my son made it back alive, but I wish he'd returned with more money or a good job so he could help us, but he can't. He has nothing.
For many migrants, the main deterrent to returning home is the fear of looking like a failure. Matar is now stuck doing the same job as before he left. He helps his father at his car repair workshop. He once dreamed of buying his father a bigger place, but in Europe, he hardly earned enough to feed himself. That's a painful realization for his father, Mamadou Fall.
We Africans are hard-working people. We are not lazy, but our politicians don't look after us. No one would leave the country if they had to work. But there are men of 30 here who can't afford even a cup of tea. They see no alternative.
That's why Matar left. But today he acknowledges that Europe isn't the world of glittering promise that television often suggests.
No matter how little I earn, I'm just happy to be here again, making my money here. I think I can make a go of my life in my country. I like to work, I'm young, and I have got my whole life ahead of me.
More and more migrants like Matar are returning to Senegal. More than 340 of them have formed an association to offer each other support and warn the next generation not to leave.
A report by Lagai Shafag.
And a question for you again, Ayeko. If journalism fails for you in Germany, would you return back to Uganda?
Abu, I can assure you, home sweet home, I will certainly
return. You always have a way of getting out of those questions.
Yes, anyway. I will certainly. That's why I can assure you, I will.
Espoir from Uganda said, in our life we must transform and we must transform impossible to impossible and live it all our life. Suleiman from Italy said, he's indeed right, all those unsuccessful should think like him, but worse is going back with nothing, neither wealth nor knowledge. The problem is many think Europe is only a money-making place.
And Tuji Amin from Canada says the challenge for many African migrants is to realize that the solution to a better life isn't always to abandon your country for the magical promised land. The solution for Africa is to make Africa a much better place to live. It can be done if we believe in ourselves.
Christopher Mofflam from the United States said, leaving home for Europe, USA or any other location is like going out of one's comfort zone into an adventure and nothing is guaranteed. It is smart to have a plan B, returning home, if the adventure does not yield expected returns.
Interesting way to end that comment.
Smart saying.
And the next one is going to be our blog report. You don't want to miss on that one.
Blog report.
Yes, he always had a pen and a notebook. And in today's era of technology, he also added a notebook. That's our blogger for today, Bram Posthumus. He is an independent press, radio and internet journalist. For over 30 years, he's been living and working in mostly West and Southern Africa. He reports on political, cultural and economic events. But Bram is not only roaming around reporting for international media organizations. He also blogs and writes books. The latest is Guinea, Masks, Music and Minerals. He's been telling me what it's all about. Take a listen.
It's a portrayal of a country that has been scandalously underreported, whereas it has an incredibly turbulent and very fascinating history. So what I've done is I've created a book which is accessible to a larger public. It's the geography. Guinea is very much shaped by its geography. It's got four distinct zones, so that's sort of like the canvas on which you can put the rest of the country's history, which I start around about the late 19th century when the great warrior Samori Touré was trying to recreate parts of the old Mali Empire, because the Mali Empire was partly in Guinea, and got thwarted by, among others, betrayal in his own ranks and, of course, the encroaching French. So that's when the French come in, colonial time comes in, and we go all the way up to 2015.
Abram, the title is very, very fascinating. Guinea, Masks, Music and Minerals. What clicks to my mind immediately is three aims. Why did you come up with this title?
It's an attempt to sum up some of the essentials of Guinea, like fil conducteur, how do you say that? Threads that run through a story. The minerals are obviously a reference to the enormous riches that are in the ground, the iron ore, which I mentioned, the bauxite. They've got the largest proven reserves of bauxite in the world. And when the current government plans go ahead, they will be producing 60 million tons a year, which is absolutely gigantic. And then they have these enormous pile of iron ore sitting in the remotest part of the country. They also have got gold, and they think there is uranium there, so that's the mineral part of it. The mask part is very much a reference to politics and the fact that there are always hidden agendas in Guinea. There are never, you know, what a politician says on its face, if you take that at face value, he will send you in the wrong direction. And of course, it also refers to the traditional arts that has been made in the forest and which has been the subject of various cultural wars, especially clashes with strict varieties of Islam that were promoted by, among others, Sékou Touré, which sounds like a paradox, but it was politically expedient for him to do so.
Very interesting. Now, the other aspect of the book is actually music. Well, I'm not a scholar of music, unfortunately, neither am I a musician, but I know that there's not so much written about African music. Is there something unique about Guinean music?
Absolutely. There is something totally unique about Guinean music. When it got its independence, the musicians who became famous members of new Guinean bands were all playing French and Caribbean cover versions of old songs. And one of the things that Sékou Touré did was basically he ordered a transformation of the music in this country. So what happened was the musicians were sent out to the villages to discover their own roots music, their own roots sounds, and their own roots songs. And they transformed these songs by putting them in a modern context.
Bram Posthumus talking about his latest publication, Guinea, Masks, Music and Minerals. An interesting insight into Guinea there. Now, Abu, Would you make your next trip to Guinea?
Well, I am half Guinean.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I am definitely planning to go there very soon to my beautiful Labe.
Are there palm trees in Guinea?
Lots of beautiful landscape, beautiful music. It's an amazing country.
Can you assure me of a good, chilling coconut juice under a palm tree?
Well, think about culture. If you think about real culture in Africa, go to Guinea-Conakry.
I don't mean to market Bram's book here, but it's really an inciting, and I'm just considering perhaps my next trip will be off to Guinea. But we leave it at that and we go to sports, where Samson Omali will bring us the latest update with what's been happening around the continent.
We begin in Rabat, Morocco, where the Confederation of African Football Executive Committee has confirmed that the African Cup of Nations will be expanded, enabling 24 teams to take part from 16. This expansion kicks off with the 2019 edition of the tournament in Cameroon. CAF has also opted to switch the Continental Showpiece from January-February to June-July, although the tournament will take place every 2 years rather than moving it to a four-year schedule. These were part of the several decisions arrived at the end of the two-day CAF symposium in Morocco. Several matches have been lined up for various venues across the continent this weekend, and the second leg of the 2018 African Nations Championship CHAN qualifier meant for players playing in the domestic league of their home countries. South Africa will host Botswana on Saturday at the Moruleng Stadium in Northwest Province of South Africa. Bafana Bafana recorded a 2-0 victory over Botswana in the first leg clash at the Francentown Sports Complex in Francentown, Botswana last weekend. Bafana Bafana coach Stuart Baxter says he will not undermine the opportunities provided by the CHAN qualifiers while the 2018 World Cup qualifiers is in sight.
Samson Omale with the latest sports from the continent. Now, Abu, talk about sports.
We are keeping eyes on the
ladies in Europe, football. Yeah. Yeah. And one thing I know for sure is that Germany is facing off Sweden.
Yeah, for sure. And you can't believe it. Germany has won this tournament unbelievably 9 times.
Well, Abu, it's wrong for you to say I can't believe. I know it's rhetorical, but I know. I mean, those are perennial winners.
And the last 6 times it's actually been won by Germany. Sweden won it once, Norway once as well. Norway twice, but the rest of it has been won by Germany.
So basically, Germany is not only becoming the giant of Europe, it's also becoming the giant of football, the giant of practically all the games.
You've been saying it in terms of football, Germany's dominating. We're not just saying that because we are in Germany, but that's a fact, right?
Oh, yeah, you're certainly right. It makes sense. It's a pleasure to be in a place where there's almost success in every aspect of life.
Yeah, anyways, I'll take you to some interesting, to some serious topics. That is about the Burundian robotic students who disappeared in Washington, D.C., the United States. So many responses, as I said, and we will try and bring these responses to you if we can. Kusi Emmanuel from Ghana said, well, if there is no foul play, then they are a disgrace to Burundi. I'm hoping nothing bad happened to their disappearance.
If there is no foul play, well, we are all dealing with speculation at the moment. We really don't know what's happening out there.
Would you stay? Again, the same question.
I already told you, Abu. I like to do things the right way. I would certainly go back home. Anyways. I mean, before I lived here, I always traveled. You could call it roaming. I was probably the little Bram. I was roaming up and down. Every time I went back home, people were thinking, what the hell is wrong with you? Why do you keep coming back? How can you not use that?
Good for you.
Yeah, but you do the right things at the right time.
I would bring similar comment to what you just saying there. Yeah. Andrew from Tanzania said, I would not have returned home. Basically, that's his opinion. We have Oloru Timi from Lagos, Nigeria. So he says, our below-average students find themselves above-average students in the Western world and graduate from said Western higher institutions are coveted by premium-paying employees. Check the recruitment webpage of oil companies. Basically saying that this is one of the reasons why this student decided to stay in the U.S. because they are brilliant back home.
Yeah, I see.
Don't have the resources.
See here that he actually continues to say, until more focus is placed on education, where technology with production in the minds of Trump is employed, many of these students will certainly be disappearing.
Fankule from Nigeria says, this is shameful. Sure, I will definitely return home.
It's also interesting to know that there are quite a number of people who are willing to return home. isn't it?
Yeah, yes. The argument has been diversified for sure.
Well, Abu, it's a Friday. It's been nice being here. Really, and we can only wish people a wonderful weekend.
Oh, definitely one. Abubakar Jallow.
Aye, Coach Matt.